Looking forward and back, communities on Kauai and Oahu have not fully recovered from devastating floods that occurred a year ago. In Waikiki, the Army Corps of Engineers is proposing a project for the Alawai Canal to reduce the risk of catastrophic flooding for Waikiki and surrounding neighborhoods. With that in mind, we decided to look back at how Waikiki has changed over the years. In this segment, produced in partnership with the University of Hawaii Oral History Project, we'll hear what Waikiki looked like in a more natural form. Our guest in the studio, Dolan Ebersole, a coastal geologist with the UHC Grant College, and Andrew Rossiter, director of the Waikiki Aquarium. We start off with HPR's news director, Bill Dorman, who sets the stage.
This is another project with the UH Center for Oral History. Director Daviana McGregor and Lurleen McGregor, their entire team, have done some great work in tracking down voices, and we're happy to share several of them this morning. We do ask for your patience. Understand that these were recorded some time ago, and so it'll take a little getting used to in terms of some of the audio at the start. We're going to play them in two sets, starting with some memories of sea life in Waikiki in the days before the Alawai Canal was built. They started to dredge for the canal in 1921. It took them 7 years to complete, and it was a project that changed the entire nature of Waikiki, which had previously been swamps, marshlands, fish ponds, lots of rivers twisting through the area. It was also filled with all kinds of sea life. Davali Notley Steer was born in 1915 in Honolulu, was better known by her nickname Tootsie. She starts by talking about the side of Waikiki up by where the Hilton Hawaiian Village is now, but long before that man-made lagoon was created.
That bay where the Hawaiian Village is now, before they built all these hotels, you know, Ilikai and all that, and the Hawaiian Village, that bay used to be one of the most productive producing seafood bays I've ever known. We used to know the kinds of seafood that used to come into that bay at different times of the year. The white, the shrimps, the crabs, the alamihi, the different kinds of fishes. There was this big reef starting there all the way down to Pea Point and over to Port Dulce. That was our lobster bed. But they were very careful that they never gave away or ate the babies. Always put that. The babies, they saved the babies.
Hearing the creak of a rocking chair there, along with the memories. Tootsie, by the way, studied hula. She became a professional hula dancer in the mainland for a time and returned to Hawaii and to Waikiki. She was part of the Kodak Hula Show for many years. To talk about some of that abundance of sea life that was so much part of old Waikiki, really.
Yeah, Andrew, I mean, do you know the type of crab that she was talking about?
No, thousands? I don't. It's very, very rare to see crabs in that kind of abundance nowadays in Waikiki. And the anecdotes about the huge diversity of fishes and the abundance of marine life, they're absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, what's the snapshot now? I mean, I know, Dolan, we were talking earlier, you swim out in that area, I swim out there, we see what's there now, and it's not as rich and vibrant maybe as it once was.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Anybody that's spent any time in Waikiki could see that it's not what it used to be. And, you know, we can attribute that to a whole bunch of different things, but I think it's at least from a observational standpoint, it certainly doesn't have the marine life that it used to.
And are there studies that kind of document what was there before, Andrew? I mean,
you know, probably the best scientific studies are the ones that were done on the marine algae, which were collected as food. There are some very, very basic studies, surveys of fish populations, but nothing that you can really use as a baseline to compare to what's there today, which is kind of sad because, you know, the aquarium is right in front of the reef there. Surely some sort of studies could or should have been done in the past.
And there are all these special protections with that marine conservation district.
Yes, yeah. The Marine Life Conservation District is, I think, pivotal to what little diversity survives now in Waikiki. If that weren't there, I think things would be much, much worse.
And then, Dolan, what can you add just about the warming, issue?
Yeah, the world is a warming place. We hear repeatedly, almost weekly now in the local media, something about sea level rise and climate change. at the university, we are closely monitoring the science behind that. particularly as it as we think it may impact Hawaii. So we're looking to go beyond just the global climate science into what are the potential impacts to Hawaii. And as an example of that, the State Department of Land and Natural Resources just recently, well, a year ago, released a risk and vulnerability assessment report with respect to sea level rise for the state of Hawaii. So they're really nice, high quality and high resolution maps for all the coast of Hawaii, looking at potential impacts of sea level rise and interesting combination of effects, things like if you add sea level plus high surf plus erosion, what they call the sea level rise exposure area has been defined. And we can think of this new coastal hazard area as the potential area that could be exposed to sea level plus erosion in the future. That's really, really powerful information for coastal managers and elected officials to start to think more critically about what we're putting and where.
And just one touch more on the past of that, I think we have some sound ready with a man named Wilbur Craw, who's spent a lot of time on the other side of Waikiki, that going more toward the Diamond Head side. Born in Makiki in 1914, eventually became part of the Beach Boys. He was a powerful swimmer, trained with future Olympian Buster Crabbe. But a lot of Wilbur's memories focused on a different kind of water, not so much the seawater, but the local streams.
The old Outrigger Club was built on the banks of a stream that came out between the Moana Hotel and the Seaside Hotel, which is now the present site of the Royal Hawaiian. And that stream went up. The bridge was built across Kalakaua Avenue, low concrete bridge, almost flat with the road. Then the stream went up into the duck pond. And we used to paddle surfboards up there, small kids, and go and look at the duck ponds, the rice paddies, the taro patches. Now and then you'd see duck eggs, you know. You swipe the duck eggs, you know what the hell for. Used to be kind of adventurous, you know, all these waterways going up all around, which is all built up now in high rises.
Now, Andrew, I don't know if you want to jump in here because, you know, I know you folks have been doing lots of studies of with the seaweed out there. I think it was Celia.
Yeah, Dr. Celia Smith of the University Department of Botany. She's been spearheading an algal, alien algae removal project for the past 15 plus years. So it's the longest algae removal project in Hawaii. And basically, there's a community effort. People from various groups come down at regular intervals, usually about 2 monthly intervals. School groups come down, companies for the weekend to help clear out the alien algae. And it's critically important in the terms of this project because they are taught to identify what is alien and what is native rather than just clear-cutting everything. So the native stuff is left, the alien algae is removed. Then it's taken on shore and it's identified to species and then it's weighed. So in that way, we can get a baseline of how much algae there is productivity over every 2 month interval. And so there's a really good solid scientific basis for the alien algae removal project and how well the native algae is recovering. And as alluded to by the previous speaker, having a native algae community there is critical in underpinning the diversity of invertebrates and the diversity of fishes that live there.
Now, the invasives, they were brought in, I think, because they thought they would be a real boon, right, for commercial harvesting of seaweed. And it didn't go right.
Yeah, they were brought in for commercial purposes. And perhaps I'm only half sure about this, but I think the person or persons who were running the project, when the project finished, they didn't remove the trial plantings that took place on the reef. And from that, many of the species, or several of the species of alien algae, have now broken off, propagated, and have spread right around the shoreline of Oahu.
So now we know the rest of the story. That was an excerpt from an earlier call-in show on the natural history of Waikiki. It was produced in partnership with the University of Hawaii Oral History Center. To hear the full discussion, head over to hawaiipublicradio.org.